Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to Lasting Values. My name is Kathy Norman. I'm the Global Head of Social Sustainability within the Global Sustainability Function here at Credit Suisse, and today's host. We are going to address the topic of financial inclusion. As we all know, despite the general progress made in terms of financial inclusion worldwide, the gender gap remains a challenge. I truly believe that financial inclusion is a pathway to women's empowerment and provides a launchpad to effect and affect change. I have the honor and pleasure of having a conversation with three phenomenal women. So let's jump right in. I'd like to welcome Eva, CEO and founder of Morphase, a quant early-stage VC firm that has developed its own AI to invest in the most exceptional founders. She founded Morphase in response to biases and inefficient decision-making processes in the current venture capital industry, where extremely talented entrepreneurs continue to lack access to capital, especially at very early stages. Eva, you said, it's been decades since there has been any meaningful innovation in the processes by which venture capital is allocated. Would you share with us how these processes are being reinvented by Morphase and how it sets you apart from the competition?
At Morphase, you know, we really aim to democratize entrepreneurship and allowing access or facilitating access to capital to talented entrepreneurs and founders. And what you know, goes along with that at the same time is that our job as an investment fund is to achieve high returns for our investors. And we all know that more diverse portfolios yield higher returns. We're all prone to biases when we have decisions that are based on our gut feeling, right? So we tend to prefer people who are similar to ourselves. And that can be fine if you go out in your evening and have a glass of wine. But if you decide who should receive capital to, you know, build the innovations and change our societies, that should not be merely based on gut feeling. And so what we do at Morphase, really, we looked into every step of the VC or investment value chain. And at every step, we really ask ourselves, how can we use data? How can we use technology to improve? And by improve, I mean to decrease bias, to increase efficiencies, to increase access. And what can we automate here so that our human capacities can be used in a more value-creating way? Every VC fund should ask in the first place, how do I get the best deals? And what we do as we invest in pre-seed is we really screen everything out there. Once a startup or a founding team has a digital footprint, we want to see them. So we screen commercial registers, job pages, things like LinkedIn to really get these signals about entrepreneurial activity, and invested a lot into that. And when I say we, I also mean, you know, like we're a team of 12 people focused on R&D, mathematicians, physicists, machine learning scientists who really dedicated the last 2 or 3 years into these topics. And that creates access, right? And I think access is something we heavily and certainly need in that industry.
Eva, in the last 3 years you were running the company, what tendencies did you observe?
So there was a lot of capital in the market, there were basically no costs for that capital. And that has changed tremendously. So in the last months, capital costs increased, meaning that as VCs, we try to be less risky in our decisions. So we really look more for startups and founding teams that demonstrate some sort of profitability. So I think it's a big change. Given that startup founders really adjust their mindset to this new situation. And at the same time, we see a lot of other things, right? So we published a report at Morphase called the Morph Pulse, where we analyzed pre-seed startup foundations in Germany. And we do see that there is insecurity in the market. And at the same time, I think one tendency that hasn't unfortunately changed so much is that there's still a big lack of diversity when it comes A, to decision makers, so to investors, but B, then naturally also to the startups out there, right? So we find in Germany that still 82% of founding teams in pre-seed are male. And that, I think this is something we necessarily have to change because, you know, we're a diverse society. We have diverse problems. So we need diverse decision makers out there to solve them.
Fantastic. Mary Ellen Iskandarian is president and CEO of Women's World Banking, the global nonprofit devoted to giving low-income women in developing world access to financing tools and resources they require to achieve security and prosperity. Mary Ellen is a passionate advocate for women's economic empowerment through greater access to finance and is leading voices for women leadership in financial services. She has spoken widely and published extensively on the topic of equality of economic opportunity and women's financial inclusion. Financial inclusion is a topic that resonates with many women. Mary Ellen, you've spent much of your career in this field. Why is it so important to foster financial inclusion for women, and can you speak to the impact of doing so?
Of course. Financial inclusion isn't really an end so much as a means to an end, and a means to so many other important levels of women's empowerment, women's inclusion in the broader economic system. If they're not a part of the financial system, if they don't have access to the wide range of financial services, and not just microloans, but savings accounts, insurance, larger business loans or personal loans or home loans, the whole range of financial services, we have great data showing that when women are given the full levers of economic growth, they can add, and this number still boggles my mind, $27 trillion to the annual global economy every year. And that is just an extraordinary amount of growth, particularly as we're going into such perilous economic times. There's also a tremendous business opportunity to be serving this very underserved population. And that really provides such a wonderful and exciting opportunity. The consulting firm Oliver Wyman has estimated that fully $700 billion of annual revenue are being left on the table by the whole range of financial service providers by not fully including women.
So what would you say are the biggest challenges for women and even women investors?
Women tend to either actually be, or maybe even sometimes more importantly, perceive themselves to be less financially literate, less digitally literate. Today, financial inclusion and digital inclusion, access to the technology, are virtually synonymous. They tend to be less aware of the opportunities that are available to them. And I think that actually segues nicely into the question about women investors. One of the things we've seen, and there's again been some great data published on this, women tend to ask a lot more questions, take longer to make financial decisions. They're not any less informed. They're not any smarter about their investment decisions. They just like to really make sure they have all of the information and understand everything. A second barrier is the sense on the part of many financial service providers that there's not a business case, or there's not really a clientele there. And certainly in the field of investment, we know, and again, we've got great data from many different sources that show, you know, something like 60% of widows, for example, will leave the financial advisor that was working with the woman and her husband when he passes on because she never felt included. She never felt talked to by the advisor. There's a real opportunity there if we just start thinking about products and approaches that meet women where they are. And then just very quickly, we still do see some regulatory barriers in a vast number of countries, particularly in the developing world.
Nanette Hechler-Fayeb is the Chief Investment Officer for the EMEA region and the Head of Global Economics and Research of Credit Suisse. In her role as a voting member of the Global Investment Committee, importantly, she also contributes to strategic and tactical asset allocation decisions that are implemented in all discretionary and advisory investment solutions of Credit Suisse. Nanette?
I would really echo some of the points made by Mary Ellen. As far as the literacy, financial literacy of women is concerned, certainly one of the challenges for financial institutions is to make sure that we use language that is straightforward, that doesn't contain any jargon, that is non-specialist language for exactly women to feel comfortable, to not have the impression that they do not control or understand some of these decisions that are in their best interest to make. They accordingly can really understand best investments in the context of their life cycles. And that's, again, a wonderful opportunity for financial institutions to really translate some specific life situations that women encounter when they, for example, create families, or when later in their life cycle they envisage their retirement. All of these moments have a financial translation, do require women to think about their investments, how to adjust them, some of the needs and requirements that may come along, new ones. And this is the responsibility of financial institutions to facilitate for them the right decision making.
I think you ladies made excellent points. And to piggyback off of that, that whole life cycle trajectory, you know, how can investment strategies actually accelerate inclusive economic growth?
Just immediately the word inclusive economic growth leaps out at me. Because again, you know, it took a long time for organizations like the IMF and the BIS to even recognize that financial inclusion, they saw the development impact, but they didn't necessarily understand the growth impact. And so we were practically celebrating in the offices of Women's World Banking when the IMF started referring to financial inclusion and women's financial inclusion particularly as macro critical. And this recognition that even with the best of intentions in terms of including underserved people, if you don't go for the least included, and unfortunately, every demographic, every age group, every economy, the most excluded are women. If you're not addressing that population in particular, you may actually be exacerbating inequalities. And so it's really sort of part and parcel. You can't achieve inclusive economic growth without including women and investing in the products, the services that women need.
Oh, absolutely. In equity investing, for example, there are a number of companies who provide solutions, for example, to affordable housing, to affordable education, to access to affordable healthcare services, increasingly also affordable food. All of these are really key elements to inclusive growth, and they empower not only the recipients of these solutions, but as investors commit capital to these firms and support their equity through their investments, also they're frankly enabling these companies to grow. They are enabling these companies to invest and innovate. And investors that are considering these are not only accelerating inclusive growth, but they are really participating in transforming growth to become more inclusive. So I do think that the private sector, and in particular investors, have a very critical role to play through their investment activities in this very targeted way, thereby making a true impact.
I love what Nanette just said about the affordable housing. And it just leapt to mind for me, an investment that Women's World Banking has made with our second impact fund. In fact, it was our first investment for this fund. It's an affordable housing finance company in India that requires the woman's name to be on the title to the property that's being financed, immediately giving her an asset that she owns. And so it's almost like this double whammy. She's not only being housed and all that that implies about inclusive growth, but you're giving her that asset that potentially, if she has a business, she could provide a security. There's all sorts of things that can come with that asset ownership. So it's a great point Nanette made.
Fantastic. And now that we're talking about the private sector and basically different stakeholders being participants in the market, how can we encourage more women to invest? And what are the steps that we can actually take to close that wealth gap for women? Nanette?
I think to make it tangible, to bring that into women's realities. You know, many women are so good at saving. They're so good at making plans for expenses for their families. There is absolutely no reason why women would not be good at investing. They just need to feel it very tangibly as part of what they're doing. And to do so, I think, once again, to provide them with a roadmap along their life cycles on how they can actually go beyond saving and making their money work the hardest for them is one very powerful way to not only close the investment gap, so women actually not doing sufficiently with their money, but also to contribute very meaningfully to closing the wealth gap that is documented at so many levels, whether it is retirement or just simply private wealth.
So glad you brought up the wealth gap point, because even here in the United States, you know, women on average own only 40% of the assets that men own. But if you then cut those numbers for women of color or adding in different ethnicities, those numbers just go down to, you know, single digits. And so that gap is very, very real in terms of women's lives. But I also thought the point you made, Nanette, about women being such great savers, we saw, at least in the microfinance world, we saw that what people often mistook as women being risk averse, and so they weren't borrowing or they weren't borrowing as much as men. When women actually had a safety net, when they had saved up to a certain point, we found that they borrowed exact same rates. They were perfectly open to building their businesses at the same rates as men.
I think there's a lot of components here. One, if we see more women investing, more women will invest, right? That's, my background is I'm a behavioral scientist, so that is general human behavior. So very strong female networks and women encouraging each other can be something that I feel can be very valuable and helpful here. I also see that with certain, you know, political measures, then we can also encourage women, right? There's some of the German institutional investors that really aim at fostering or aim at supporting female investors because they just set criteria. For example, a fund must have or should have one female GP, and then they are eligible for a certain program. I think that is something that can help a lot. At the same time, these criteria very often are still discriminatory in themselves, because if you say you want to encourage female investors by giving them access to capital as GPs, and at the same time you say, well, they have to have a track record from the first investment to IPO, and then historically there's just almost no women in that industry.
So moving on to the next question, ladies, what would you say is the most amusing, might be the wrong word, but the most interesting misconception you have faced as women investors or even within the financial services?
Oh, I have one very amusing misconception, and that has been that in some cultural backgrounds, there might not be so much participation of women in financial services. And oftentimes, I am being confronted with the assumption that in the Middle East, in particular, there would not be so many women participating. Well, I have to say I have found more women in Kuwait being part of financial services than there are in Bern or in St. Gallen in Switzerland. And I found that very amusing.
I think there's various that I could talk to you about right now. I mean, certainly, right, we see that, and that again plays back to similarity bias, that a misconception is, or misperception is, that if you do not reflect the typical stereotype investment traits, right, from your background, from your personality, from your setup, that is something where you're less highly valued, or you're perceived less strongly. For example, I have a co-founder who's male, and if I in the past, when we started the company, we were on events together, like other LPs or investors would more often seek a conversation with my male co-founder or partner. And I think this is something where we certainly, you know, need to change our mindset and our perception to be more inclusive in our behavior. And that's something that happens unconsciously, right? But if we create awareness for it, we can change it.
I think there is often, you know, as women, and I'm sure all of us have had that experience of there being something that really wasn't the most kosher or progressive thing to be said. And we smile, we laugh along, we know that that's what's sort of expected of us, and we want the room to move on, so it's easier to laugh about it. But there really are so many situations in which there are, you know, just assumptions that we are more risk averse, that we won't take to make the big play, that we aren't ambitious, that we don't define success, perhaps in some different ways, but in some very similar ways to men. And so I guess I'm glad you questioned the amusing part of that question, because sometimes it's not very amusing, and we really want to work on these misconceptions so that all women can go forward.
Fantastic. And ladies, you know, how has being an investor affected you personally? I'm going to start with Mary Ellen.
And I'd really love to answer it in the context of the organization that I lead, Women's World Banking, which, you know, today is a 43-year-old nonprofit organization, but about a dozen years ago, we realized that perhaps there was even more of an impact that we could have on making more financial services available to more underserved women as an investor. And so we launched our first Gender Lens Impact Fund, and I am very pleased to say that my hunch was correct. I give our fund management team such great credit, because very often if we're leading a round of investing, we'll put certain requirements about numbers of women on the board or numbers of women in senior leadership that we want to see accomplished. And none of the other investors are saying, no, we don't agree, we don't want to invest alongside. They're putting their money in that same round of financing on those same terms. And management knows then that this is a really important issue and takes it really seriously when it's not just, you know, one investor, Women's World Banking, you know, with that name, insisting on it, but all of us seeing the company stronger by virtue of being a more gender diverse company. So I'm hugely excited about the impact that we're having.
Fantastic. And now going to Nanette, from your lens and from your seat, how has being an investor impacted or affected you personally?
Being an investor has defined what I do every day. It is part of a passion that I have for financial markets. But I would say that personally, when you take a lens that is really the individual's lens, I mean, investing has really taught me taking decisions. You know, when you're investing, especially when you're investing on behalf of clients, like what we do at a financial institution like Credit Suisse, there's so much trust that is being put into you. There is so much decisions that other individuals that are looking for that capital to fulfill their dreams, to open up opportunities for them, to create financial safety, all of that is being put in your hands. And that makes really you, I think, realize how much every decision that you take has an impact, how carefully you have to think about it, and also how much vested interest you have in these decisions. I really thought it made me grow as a person.
You mentioned creating an impact. So when have you actually gone against conventional wisdom in order to succeed?
So I think, by founding Morphise, it probably did, right? I mean, if we look into who we are and what sort of fund we are certainly very different to the status quo, right? We're a team of scientists, mathematicians, behavioral scientists, who, you know, are outside for, or coming from outside of the system to make improvements, to challenge the status quo.
Antoinette, back on to you.
Oh, I was really thinking about that question quite some time and deciding what I would be picking up in terms of going against conventional wisdom. And really what I left this with was my decision many years ago to leave the labor force. I took more than 3 years away from financial markets to raise my children. And I had the most wonderful time. And the conventional wisdom was at that time that if you were leaving financial markets for such an extended period, it would be very difficult to come back and make a career. And what I demonstrated was that that was nonsense. It was certainly hard, but it's absolutely doable. And everything that I am laying to the table ever since then is showing success. So I can only encourage to go against conventional wisdom and to do what you feel is right.
That's absolutely a beautiful example, Mary Ellen.
No, that was a beautiful story. Nanette, thank you for that. I think I don't have quite as inspiring a story, perhaps, but I think, you know, I alluded to the decision to take on investment under the umbrella of the Women's World Banking NGO. And, you know, 12 years ago, impact investing was a much newer thing and a newer concept. I was very fortunate that our board of directors saw the opportunity and understood what I was trying to accomplish. But, you know, convincing investors to back a nonprofit in a first-time fund was, you know, the definition of non-conventional wisdom.
Ladies, thank you so much for taking the time to join us on this podcast. In closing, I would add that recent studies show that women-led or minority-led teams lead to higher returns, improved profitability, and enhanced risk management. At Credit Suisse, we believe that it's time to refresh the rules. We believe it's time to redefine how we play. We are here to make that happen. That's why we believe that now is the time to change the game. So hit that follow button on Apple or Spotify and check in with us every month on Lasting Values, the sustainability podcast by Credit Suisse.
Should a bank clean up the ocean? We engage with companies creating ocean impact and preventing plastic pollution practices. We're on it.
The information provided herein constitutes general marketing material. It is not investment advice, nor otherwise based on a consideration of the personal circumstances of the addressee, nor is it a result of objective or independent research. The information provided herein is not legally binding, and it does not constitute an offer or invitation to enter into any type of financial transaction. The information provided herein was produced by a member of Credit Suisse Group AG and/or its affiliates, hereafter CS, with the greatest of care and to the best of its knowledge and belief. The information and views expressed herein are those of CS at the time of writing and are subject to change at any time without notice. They are derived from sources believed to be truthful and reliable. CS provides no guarantee with regard to the completeness and accuracy of the information, and where legally possible, does not accept liability for any direct, indirect, incidental, specific, or consequential losses that might arise from making use of the information. If nothing is indicated to the contrary, all figures are unaudited. The information provided herein is solely for information purposes and the exclusive use of the recipient, and is not intended and should not be construed as legal, accounting, tax, nor financial advice provided by CS. If this material is issued and distributed in the US, it is by CSSU, a member of NYSE, FINRA, SIPC, and the NFA, and CSSU accepts responsibility for its contents. Clients should contact their sales representative and execute transactions through a Credit Suisse subsidiary or affiliate in their home jurisdiction, unless governing law permits otherwise. This material is intended for institutional investors only, not for retail distribution. It may not be reproduced, neither in part nor in full, without the prior written permission of CS. Important information for investors in Germany. The information and views expressed herein are those of CS at the time of writing and are subject to change at any time without notice.